WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively taking the Maryland Crab Cake back out on the road. The tour begins on April 5th, and we're going to be going all spring. I'm lining stuff up, man. I got people, Captain Larry's on the list. We're going April 27th down in Federal Hill. We're going to be doing some stuff near the ballpark as well at Fadley's. I have my Fadley shirt on. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. It is the throwback, the 50th anniversary. We kick it off on April 5th at Costas in Dundalk. I've got great guests coming that day as well. And our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. 0% financing for two more years. And that is good stuff. What's incredible right now is there's so much going on in the business space, sports business space. I talk to Marty Conway about it often, or bring other folks on. This guy sits sort of at the top in a Sports Business Journal for many, many years, and a guy that comes at it honest because he's got his own crab cake tour coming across the border because they don't put him in Virginia. He's got to come over to Maryland to get them. Longtime business reporter and covering all the comings and goings of regional sports networks and leagues and franchises and XFLs and USFLs and WTFLs. And John Arand is here. He is our defending champion. Best crab cake you've had lately? Where was it, John? Did you go over to Costas recently?
I was at Costas. You know, unfortunately, I did Costas. It was January 2nd. So, like, it was very good, but it wasn't a proper crab cake time. Unlike you, I rate the crab cakes. Two perfect scores. One Fadley's, which was fantastic.
My wife would agree with you. My wife loves, and she doesn't have a favorite, but the Fadley's is mustardy. So if you know, and it's the only one that's like a Fadley's crab cake. That's the amazing. I've had 200 crab cakes.
Totally unique taste. Absolutely. Unique.
Yes. Yeah.
And number two is Coco's. Coco's Pub. I just thought that it was a little pub. You wouldn't expect there to be really good crab cakes in there, but boy, that knocked my socks off. One thing I found, you put me in Virginia. I'm in D.C. Don't put me in Virginia, Nestor. The farther you get away from the bay, the worse the crab cakes come. And it's just a truism that I figured out.
Well, I figured that out when I went to Frostburg and I went to Cumberland and I went out. Although Deep Creek has some legitimate, so does Frederick as well. I guess coming at it honest for you, you are a national writer, an international, write about media and all that. But really, at heart, you're a really local sportsman. You're a big Wizards guy. You're a big Terps guy. You're always sort of buzzing about D.C. and Baltimore. You come up to Fadley's and get a crab cake and go to an Oriole game from time to time. There really is something going on here right now with this Lamar situation, the Orioles' ascendance, the Terps played last week, still Preakness coming here. It feels vibrant to me again in some way that maybe the plague took away. I don't know what's going to happen with Lamar. I don't know if everybody's ever going to come back to Oriole games or not, but it feels like sports is relevant again in a way here.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the plague taking it away, and I think that definitely plays a part of it, but man, I'll tell you, just having hope on I almost said on 33rd Street, having hope with the Orioles is just, it makes things so much more fun. It makes things like just so much more optimistic. I mean, I'm telling you right now, the Orioles this year have two future Hall of Famers on there, and Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson. I mean, they're going to the Hall of Fame. I'm calling it right now, even though they've played.
It's a little early for that, John. I mean, we said that about Fred Lynn back in the day too. You know, I remember, you know,
I'm calling it though. Combined,
I think we said that about Ken Gerhart at one point, maybe Craig Worthington. You know, by the way, man, you're an old newspaper head. I've been having a lot of fun with this. I went into an antique store on the way up to see Springsteen at State College, and I scored old school John Steadman predicting that the Orioles would win the 66 World Series before they won it. I have the sections. I have the iconic, I've only seen this on like on mugs and on cups and on like, you know, towels and things like that. I actually have the real one now. So this Oriole thing and baseball season, to your point, for guys like us, it's the heartbeat of everything when this thing begins, and to have no chance to win before the season begins. But the game's about to change so much. And more than anything, on the media side that you cover, this regional sports network with my Sinclair buddies up the hill here, we're about to see a media de-revolution. I don't know what the word would be, but things are about to change. And I don't know that John Angelos is really equipped for that at Masson here.
Yeah, Masson isn't really. Masson has its own set of struggles that's totally separate from what's going on with the Sinclair RSNs, which are now called Diamond Sports RSNs. And Diamond Sports runs 19 regional sports networks across the country. They just filed for bankruptcy. The problem with Diamond Sports is that they have more than $8 billion, billion with a B, worth of debt. And the company itself is worth like less than $2 billion. So it's a totally unsustainable business right now. And they have creditors that want to get paid. They have teams that want to get paid. And they had to file for bankruptcy. There are the NBC Sports group. They own a bunch of regional sports networks in Philly and up in New York, all up and down the West Coast. They're doing fine.
They're performing better. I haven't read every piece
performing
of the
better. They're actually making profits. So it's
but they also have other entities other than a baseball team, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. But even like the Yes Network is very profitable for the Yankees. Nesson is doing very well. The Cubs channel, the Dodgers channel.
Masson should be doing well, right?
Yeah, Masson isn't where Diamond is. It certainly isn't where Yes Network is or Nesson is either. So it's not about to. Masson is not about to file for bankruptcy. And if you want to watch the Orioles this summer, you're going to be watching them on Masson or Masson 2.
Well, not in March. You're not. You know, I mean, the spring training thing. John, you're an Oriole fan, dude. Like, it's such a breach of trust that you're in the baseball business. You bilked every old lady who's now dead for $3.54 a month for years and years, who didn't even know your baseball games were on. Everybody in the state that had cable television was funding this like a utility, literally through six or seven states at one point. You go down to Nags Head and see Orioles games in the 90s before they built the Nationals. And all of the money that the Angelos family has sucked out of profits in the team, profits in the RSN, screwing over the learners, all of this stuff. And then John shows up on Martin Luther King Day and doesn't want to take questions about the relevance of not having a lease. I mean, I've written this many times, and I've probably written it flippantly on your Facebook page. Incompetence doesn't take a day off ever. And the lack of competence these people have shown here all along, but the promise of Masson and what it could have been, and other than the Nationals fighting with the Orioles and no news departments, you know, bass channel fishing and hunting, and I don't even know what. Every time I put it on, there's guys in hats playing cards, you know, in the middle of the night, right? Like, it's never portended to be anything that Nesson or the Yes Network was, although, you know, John Angelos flew John Foss around, and they were going to have a real network and all, until, like, oh, there's a news department. We don't do news around here. We hate the media. So they never did anything modern. They had old equipment. They didn't HD. They don't stream games. They don't stream games in market. I mean, they don't show spring training games. But the spring training thing, to me, has been, for fans, even worse, because it involves the fans and it involves your primary product. It'd be like a band saying, come see us play. We're not going to give you the album. We're not going to, you know what I mean? Like, it's the come on for the season that I would be watching the game right now. The game would be on. Adley Rutschman would be on. The replays would be on all night. And you would have a conduit to, hey, call the Orioles. Go to Orioles.com. Buy tickets. Buy the plan. Buy the special deal. Get the bobblehead. Like, they've lost all of that. They lose 6 weeks of momentum, and then they roll out of baseball on a cold day next week. It's so poorly run, and you know this because you see how the other teams are run.
Well, there are two things to go here. One is, like, if I take off my Oriole fandom hat and just put on my business hat, the spring training games don't make money for any of the RSNs. Even you're a hardcore fan, you work from home, you're going to have it on. I would too. But the viewership numbers that tune in, it doesn't make it worthwhile for the network to do it. What the RSNs, do you remember? I'm certain the Best Damn Sports Show, John Sally, and sure. RSNs used to try to make make themselves 24-hour channels with high quality programming, and to keep people all the throughout the day. What every RSN executive has figured out over the past several decades is there's only one thing that fans come to see. It's not the pregame show. It's the live game. And if our team wins, they stay for the post game. If our team loses, they turn it off right away. And so what the Angelos,
that's universal at 30 teams.
That's 30 teams, and it's baseball, basketball, hockey, everything. And so what the Angelos have figured out is with Masson, people come for the live games. So we're just going to focus on the live regular season games, and that actually makes a lot of business sense to do that. The other side of the coin is what you talked about, and when you run a local sports network, and when you buy a team, you enter in a social contract with the people of the Baltimore, Washington area. I'll still put Washington up, and even though I'm the lone remaining Washingtonian that likes the Orioles, probably, but I'll put Washington there.
Because you like suffering, John.
Hey, we're going to be good for a while.
Well, the Nationals are going to suffer now too.
Yeah, so. The Nationals are where the Orioles were several years ago. But there is a social contract, and sometimes you do have to do things that maybe don't make financial sense, like show a spring training game or two, like a couple. You don't even have to show every single one, but I would love to start to get my excitement building up to opening day by watching, you know,
how they can't put a camera in center field and have three camera ops and no broadcaster or just a radio guy and stream it on Orioles.com so people can watch it. Maybe not even in HD. The fact that I can put my freaking show on the air on Zoom live and they can't put a camera in their ballpark.
Yeah, get somebody in there with an iPhone to periscope it.
Dude,
right?
It's insane. It's embarrassing. I mean, and it speaks to, they think that their spring training product is shit. And you know what I mean? And they're not proud of it. They don't want to show it, but they don't even have the sense to understand that this is the dress rehearsal for the season. And this is the album for the band. This is the press conference that leads up to the season. This is the thing that builds momentum that can help you sell tickets and get people into the soap opera. This is how you feature your talent. Like, it's, they don't even understand that. Yeah. And like, it's fundamental that all these 18 years into having this network that they show two spring training games, it's beyond frustrating. It doesn't make business sense. It's hiding your brand. I mean, like, it's crazy.
Yeah. Again, they know that the audience that they're giving up by not showing the those games. Like, even if they were to take, let's say, you know, we'll have Nesson produce the game when the Orioles play the Red Sox in spring training, and we'll take Nesson's feed. Even that satellite link, they'll lose money on it just because they're not going to get the fans, and they're not going to sell the advertising next to it, and the cable operators and satellite companies, they already have the channel. They're always already paying for the channel. So you don't, like, again, there are two different ways of looking at it. Strictly business, it makes sense. You're going to lose money off of it. For the social contract that comes with owning the RSN and owning the team, yeah, you should be like catering to your hardcore fan base, I think.
Well, you would make a decision in this offseason to say, we're going to put 8 or 10 games on because we're good. You know, people want to see going. This isn't 4 years ago, we didn't have anything anybody wanted to see. I mean, you are interested. I am interested. Everywhere I went today where Terps fans were and Ravens fans were, they're interested because you're telling me they got two future Hall of Famers. Well, I'd like to see them play. You know, yeah. That's pretty fundamental. John Arand is here, Sports Business Journal, longtime insider for all things business. The Orioles stability and the lease and the future and ownership, it's fascinating to watch these NFL people. And again, I would be at the NFL owners meetings this weekend if the NFL hadn't illicitly taken my pay. I've been at 15 of the last 17 owners meetings, John. So I'm not going to be at the Biltmore this week. But this execution of the execution of removing the commander, everybody seems to think it's some foregone conclusion. And I'm thinking, you haven't seen how the bad guy in the movie really acts, right? Like, this is an amazing thing to witness. And I don't know where the Angelos thing ends, but I know Sparky thinks he's going to own the team. Like, it's very apparent John thinks he's going to spend the next 25 years in his mind, the way he's showing it, that He feels like he's going to own this team forever. I don't know that the people in Major League Baseball feel that way about him or his mother or their infighting. The whole thing's been bizarre. I mean, the fact that the old man is eating pudding and every dirty, dirty secret that the Baltimore Sun or some media guy like you would have gotten a hold of, they put in a court document and they put their laundry, the worst of worst stuff, out into the world last year and then walked like, oh my God. And they got good baseball players. But I don't know what this means for Elise. And I don't know what this means for 2028 or 29 or 30 and how the thing's going to be run.
You know, you mentioned Dan Snyder, you know, selling the Commanders, and you'll believe it when you see it. And it's, you know, you see how he's acted through his entire ownership of that franchise. And it's with the Orioles, you know, everybody is waiting to see for the day that Peter ends up dying. And then once that happens, we're going to know then whether John is going to step in and say, like, I want to be the long-term owner and trust me with this franchise, or whether he and his brother and mom end up, you know, bringing in somebody to sell the team. I do know that there have been people that have been kicking their tires on the team, you know, and nothing can happen while Peter is still alive, has been what I've been told on that. So it's, you know, right now you're just trying to, you know, look into the crystal ball and see, and like, you just don't know what's going to happen, but those are going to be one of those two. Either they're going to turn around and sell and make a windfall off of it, or John Angelos is going to say, like, you know, I am responsible for building up a team right now that is going to be competitive for, you know, at least the next decade. Like, you know, I want to see this through.
Well, John's running around with Governor Moore and, you know, running around Atlanta and taking BP and Sarasota. And we're going to build a, you know, a kingdom of baseball, just like they did on the Beltway. They took it out to the Beltway in Atlanta, and we're going to have this and that shot. Like, okay, dude doesn't even live here. You know, as a guy that's vested in the community, right? Like, I'm wondering what the future of all of sports is here, because I've been on the air 31 years, and I remember we almost lost the baseball team. Like, and it was always predicted that Edward Bennett Williams was going to take that team to D.C. Never did. Camden Yards happened. And then we had to go fight for the football team, and they just gave the football team a bunch of money too. That this anchor for our city, it's so important. And more than that, as we learn with Machado and, you know, whatever that thing was with Buck Showalter a few years ago, that it's fleeting. You know, the beginning of this Hall of Fame run you're talking about with Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman, it's fleeting. If people don't come to the ballpark, Adley Rutschman turns out to be a great player. He needs to go get paid. We're where we are with Lamar Jackson. And John, I'll tell you, this Lamar thing, it is so thick, and I haven't even got – it's fascinating I get it this far into you. We don't spend 3 minutes here not talking about Lamar Jackson, because everywhere I go, it's the biggest story in the history of Baltimore sports from a contract standpoint. There was never a fear Ripken was leaving. You know, the Ray Lewis murder trial was certainly something that was there. But this Lamar thing is an on-the-field thing. It's a franchise thing. It's a race thing. It's a quarterback thing. It's a union thing. It's an agent thing. It's just all of that. And I don't know where the out is in this. I'm getting the vibe he's going to come back and play here, because I don't think any other team wants him to the tune that he wants to be wanted.
When you go out in the market and you talk to Ravens fans, do they like Lamar Jackson? Is this tarnishing his reputation and they wouldn't mind to see him go if they get somebody for him?
I'd be lying to you if I didn't tell you it was based along racial lines, much like Trent Dilfer and Tony Banks was 20 years ago here when I took those phone calls, and they weren't pretty either. You know, there are Lamar fans and then there are Ravens fans. I think if you're a Ravens fan and you think like a salary capologist and you think like he hasn't played at the end of the last 2 years, I think like a reporter in that feels like the team doesn't like him very much. And I've been around there, and I know for a fact the coach was pissed last year. I know for a fact the coach was pissed last year when he didn't show up at OTAs. And I know for a fact the owner would be pissed that he's holding signs up, pay me, and his Twitter is pay me. And And then he doesn't come to the playoff game. And there's all sorts of dust about Harbaugh's demeanor at the end of the year, what they said to NFL Network and their own media voice, and, you know, what Chad Steele and their communications department was communicating to their league partners about his availability to come back and play. And then him out on Twitter, the errant perform fellatio tweet to the kid from Pennsylvania side. Then there was the, I was grade two, almost three. He's his own doctor and he's his own agent. And this isn't played well. And he's cost himself a lot of money. So it's, there's so many things you can say about it. Will the Ravens be a better team without him next year? No way. Will they be a better franchise without him over the long haul by not giving him $200 million and having him be somewhat mercurial here at this point? As a fan, you know, there was life after Trent Dilfer. There was life after Joe Flacco. There'll be life after Lamar Jackson. And I know the way Bisciotti and DaCosta, well, we found him. We drafted him 32nd. We'll draft another guy. Well, there'll be another quarterback here. They're just not going to make a mistake and give the money to the wrong player. That's been a philosophy they've had forever. But that's really hard, I think, to explain to people that love the excitement of Lamar.
Yeah, I, for the longest time, I thought he was gone, and I thought he was going to leave. And then when the Ravens put that bizarre franchise tag on him, what's it called?
Non-exclusive.
Like, yeah, not an actual franchise tag, but a non-exclusive where he could still go. And the fact that nothing's happened since then suggests to me that the market for Lamar isn't as high as Lamar Jackson wants it or expects it to be. And so I've come one. I'm not covering this, but I do follow this. I do follow the business, and I have an opinion on it. But I've come 180 from thinking that there was no chance he was going to be or a small chance he was going to be wearing a Ravens uniform next year. To now, I it looks like he will, barring something. I have circled the NFL draft because that's when all these deals get made. And if something, he gets through the NFL draft and he's still with the Ravens, he's going to suit up again in September. I'm pretty certain.
You have fascinated me. John Aranda is here from Sports Business Journal. I saw the, it may have been Kurt Badenhausen, whatever the Forbes does the valuations. You guys all do valuations and different stuff, but the valuation of the Golden State Warriors has like I looked at it and I'm like, they're like worth what, like the Cowboys and the Yankees. And like, so I'm thinking about this and I'm like, the Cowboys were the Cowboys, America's team. Yankees are the Yankees. And, you know, so you get the value on these franchises. And, the Patriots won for 15 years, and they're in a big market. I was sort of blown away that one player, one coach, one little era, that a franchise could take on a stratospheric raise in regard to a player and a thing doing that. And I guess Lemieux for the Penguins. I mean, we could go back through history and Tony Gwynn kind of saved the Padres, right? So there's things we could say these players did that. But when I saw that valuation, I thought, in the modern era, wow, that's an amazing statement that when you see a franchise value go up in that way because of the play on the court or on the field, I didn't think that happened anymore. I really didn't.
Yeah, it's beyond the play, though. They just built that new arena. And that the new arena is right in San Francisco. I mean, you saw it's when Camden Yards opened, you know, and it was like right off the highway, right by the Inner Harbor. Like all of a sudden, that raised the valuation of the Orioles way back when in the mid '90s, early '90s. And I think that also plays a big part of it because as the 49ers left San Francisco and like the Warriors, they're the only one. They're still the San Francisco 49ers, of course, but they went to San Jose to play their games. The Warriors are the only ones in what is one of the richest cities in America, right in the middle of Silicon Valley.
I'm going to see a concert there at some point before I see a basketball game. What are you covering? What's on your mind as, you know, we enter spring and the thaw? I mean, the RSN thing, I know you're covering that because of baseball, but the F1's kind of come from nowhere. I don't get it. You know, I mean, the money and NASCAR and moving wheels and guys beating the hell out of each other. I mean, there's so many things that are vibrant and profitable in sports right now. And you sort of cover all of them. Where's your mind?
Well, so my mind is really on how people are going to be watching these games moving forward. And so you're seeing, you know, the, when Netflix and, Disney Plus were going crazy. Everybody was spending all this money to try to get streaming subscribers and build them up. And they were losing, all these media companies were losing billions of dollars on that. And all of a sudden Wall Street was said, we don't like that. We care about profits. And so now you're seeing all these big companies retrench. So at ESPN, they just paid, you know, more than $2 billion a year for the NFL. They're about to go and do a NBA deal that's going to possibly triple, you know, what they're currently paying, certainly double.
Well, they bet right on the NBA, right? And I guess in the end, they bet right on firing all of their talent, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, ESPN was the original sort of bloodletting, right?
Again, it's all about the live games, and all these networks have figured out, like, that's where our bread is buttered. And so the big story that I'm watching is that we're creating halves. The NFL's a have, that NBA's a have, baseball looks like it's a have, and the have nots. And you know, Major League Soccer, it couldn't get a TV deal done, so it went to Apple. The Pac-12 is having some struggles right now. So where that line gets drawn, and who falls below that line, and who's able to stay above that line, is going to be the most fascinating story on my beat for the next 3, 4, 5 years.
And then how that money at the Big Ten level and to all these teams, how that affects their basketball programs and their volleyball programs and the NIL. I mean, there's so the business of sports has evolved dramatically, right? Remember back when you used to be a sports business? What is that? What do you do? You know, like that now it's in every minute of every day. And the people that don't understand it, when they fly in and Lamar Jackson says he's representing himself, and they're like, well, that sounds right. You should represent yourself, right? I mean, it's amazing how much money he's cost himself by not doing the business well. And the business is at the heart of all of it. And I think for all of us, seeing ticket prices go up and seeing where we are and seeing, like, I paid a lot for Springsteen, this whole model of ticketing where one night it's $5, the next night it's $100 to go sit in the same seat. People are, you know, they're focused on the business because it's affecting them. The business of sports affects how I can find my baseball game, or whether I can find my baseball game or not, especially in this market.
Mm-hmm. And you know, that variable ticket pricing is going to happen in media too. If you all of a sudden you cut the cord and you don't have cable, but the Red Sox are coming to town. Maybe not the Red Sox. They're going to be awful this year. But the Yankees are coming to town. Or all of a sudden, if you want to watch that game, not this season. This is like 3, 2, 3, 4, 5 seasons away. You know, that game is going to be maybe $5 for you to say, like, that's a game I want to watch. Whereas if the Indians come or the Guardians come to town, it might be like $1.99 or something along those lines.
Be very interesting to see people are going to pay to watch games. Yeah, I'm wondering when the NFL, now that they've thrown me out of my seats, well documented, you can go read about that, John, but I paid for my seats for all these years. They threw me out. I get a couple grand back. At some point, they're going to put the barrier up and say it's $5 to watch the game this week. I guess. I mean, all this money from Apple and all this, it's still free and we're getting ads. But at some point, to your point, yeah, you want to watch the Orioles play the Blue Jays tonight? It's $1.25, whatever it is. I don't know what the market will bear, but I think it's going to be a lot more than it is. I remember talking to Leones as his kid, and people were going to give them money to watch minor league nothing shippered indoor football, and like they were going to pay for minor league apps and stream it. And I'm like, I don't know, dude. You better just get people interested in your sport. You better just get people interested in baseball. You know, again, because it is a soap opera. It's 162 games. You're an old guy. I'm an old guy. I spent an hour talking about the 1973 season here yesterday. Okay. So, you know what I mean? Like, I'm a baseball guy, right? But my kid's not, and I don't know that his kid will be. And I think for all of them that just think arrogantly, because you have smelled this arrogance all these years. Oh, it'll be $10 a game and we're in first place. They'll all buy it. I don't think so. Maybe they'll go to the sports bar. Remember when the sports bars had to pony up all the money for the fights and stuff? I'm fascinated to know what this model is, because it all feels much like the newspaper business, right? Restrictive. It feels very much like a paywall. And every time I see people in media, nobody wants to pay 50 cents for you or me or anybody else to open a paywall. And I'm thinking, you're going to do this for games. Be careful. They might just not care about the Hershey Bears anymore, you know, literally. Yeah.
The one thing, though, that I always point to, in 2033, the only way you can watch the NFL is not the only way, but you're going to be able to watch every NFL game on broadcast television. the World Series going through, like, I think that ends in 2030. That's always going to be on broadcast television. Every single NHL playoff game is going to be on traditional linear television, either cable or broadcast. You know, the Southeastern Conference, Big Ten, those are deals that are predicated on big TV distribution that go
but
into
unless
the
2030s. But what happens when the network goes bankrupt?
I think I feel pretty confident that Comcast, which owns NBC, and Disney, which owns ABC, are going to be able to keep those up and running.
You got 19 baseball teams. You better figure out how the game's coming on in a couple weeks. So,
well, that's the diamond is a different case than the traditional big broadcasters.
I'm sure they'll be over here to sit in my studio. Hey, promote your podcast, man. You do your thing with Marshawn, and you have one of my I have such a crush on Rebecca Lobo. I can only have her husband on, and I've admitted this to Steve. So I would be if I have Rebecca Lobo, and I'd be like. I'd be like this, you know, but you had Rebecca on this week. You have a lot of great, great guests on your pod.
Yeah, she was our guest this week. She was fantastic. Just talking about the rise in women's sports and how she covers the WNBA and women's college basketball.
Got her. She's great. She's great.
To talk about how she met Steve, which was a great story. But it's a podcast that we post it every morning, Wednesday morning about 6 a.m. on everywhere you can find a podcast, but it's a Marshawn Norin sports media podcast. I have a lot of fun doing it, Nestor. It's a hell of a lot more work than I ever thought it was going to be.
I make it look easy, don't I?
You do. You sit down for 45 minutes, you talk, and then you get out, right? Yeah, no, I wish.
Well, I'm glad you respect my work, John Oran. So, Sports Business Journal, find him. If you see a guy that looks like him sitting having a crab cake someplace, he's stolen my shtick. It's okay. I stole the shtick, right? So let me.
I just have a quick question. So sure. Where's your go-to place in Montgomery County, Maryland?
I don't have a go-to in Montgomery County. I've been to places, but I don't have a go-to. I don't want to be mean. I don't want to use the W word. I had a very unorthodox crab cake in Montgomery County last year. It had celery in it. They made it like chicken salad.
Oh, God.
It was really, really, really weird. Uh-huh. And they shipped them. They had a shipping sign. I'm thinking, oh, my God. It's like people – I used to talk to baseball players, and this is no disrespect to the O'Brickies people, okay, because they have their joint down at the airport. It's a family name. I had never eaten at O'Brickies in my life, and I'm from East Baltimore, right? East Baltimore is spicy. The crab cakes at Costas, they taste different than the crab cakes at Fadley's because the crab cakes at Pappas are different. They're creamier. They're more country club. They're sweeter. An East Side crab cake is salty and it's Old Bay. And it just is. I grew up on the East Side. So I go to O'Brickies all these years later, 15 years ago, downtown before they closed up down there. And I got crabs. They put white pepper on the crabs. So like they brought the crabs and I looked at them and I like legend, all the ball players. I go to O'Brickies for my crab. Dude, you ain't even ate a crab. If you've gone to O'Brickies, you don't even know what a crab is. And it's not bad. It's just your fingers don't smell like J.O. Your feet, you know, like your hands have no smell. You don't smell like you've been eating crabs. Like, and it is a little milder. I like white pepper. I like Asian food, you know, but like I just couldn't get over that they prepared the crab completely differently than I had ever seen it done. And I was 40 years old when I found this crab. So I would just say for you with the crab cake thing, my best advice to you would be to try them all, which is like, and I'm not even being coy, but like the Coco's crab cake that you love so much, that is a sweet country club style crab cake. Pappas is going to be similar to that. G&M's going to be spicier than that because they have Tabasco in their sauce. You know who has a crab cake very similar to that? Barrett's on the Pike has a delicious, delicate crab cake. I would tell you over on the Eastern Shore, if you go to Suicide Bridge.
You sent me to Suicide Bridge and I only had the crabs. I didn't have the crab cake.
What? Well, I sent you to a crab cake place and you didn't get a crab cake?
Well, we got home.
What are you, like a Wizards fan or something? What's wrong with you?
We got a dozen crabs and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do the crabs. But they were so good. I'm going back there. I'm going back to it.
Oh, man. I mean, I'm not going to send you down to the Fishing Creek, down to Old Salties and some of these places I've been. So listen, I would just say to you on the crab cake thing, keep trying, keep going. You'll find a flavor palette. I keep getting different ones. And every time I go, I'm like, there's five or six styles, you know, for the most part, about how creamy it is, how much mustard is in it, how much mayonnaise is in it, what the slurry tastes like, that the slurry is sweet forward or mustard forward, or even Worcestershire. I've caught a little bit of that in certain crab cakes. So keep going.
You know,
they're delicious.
You know, part of my scoring system, though, is certainly about the taste, about the presentation of it. But it's also like, you know what I loved about Costas? If I was driving down the street, there's no chance I would have pulled into that a restaurant that looked like such a normal, just like, you know,
family restaurant.
Yeah, totally. I would have expected one of the greatest crab cakes to come out of a place. Coco's, just a neighborhood bar, like another one that just like just looks like someplace that, like the even the Suicide Bridge, like it's right on the water, but you just kind of like you have to like happen upon it. So
And it's been a search for me through my home state. I have, you know, there's still places in the state I haven't been yet that I need to go to. So this year's our 25th anniversary on August 3rd. I will have had the radio station 25 years on August 3rd. So we're going to celebrate in September. I'm doing 25 oysters in different ways in different places. And I'm going to try to go to 25 places I've never been to. So yeah. I want to go to places that are even, because I'm a variety guy. You know what I mean? Like, I like doing and seeing new things in new places. And this tour has just been phenomenal for that. And meeting new people and seeing things in the state that I never knew exist. Beautiful. I mean, like Blackwater Refuge, beautiful. Deep Creek Lake. They didn't play football, baseball, basketball, or hockey there, so I didn't go, right? It's like Sacramento. I ain't never been there. Austin, Texas. I'd never been there. So I'm trying to go to places and do things. But here in Maryland, doing this crab cake tour, it is taking me on roads. If you want to go on a beautiful trip, I'm going to give you a crab cake that's, I don't want to say it's the greatest crab cake I've ever had, but it's in the conversation, and I would say I've never had a better crab cake than this crab cake. It's a place called Old Salties. You have to drive, you go to Cambridge, and you just go south. And what you want to do is you want to take extra time. Don't be in a hurry. Be Eastern Shore, okay? And you want to go to Blackwater Refuge and make time to do that, and you want to do the Harriet Tubman Trail. They're right next to each other, and you can get a little history, deep history, unbelievably beautiful birds, fish, creatures, eagles, flying creatures, herons, people fishing, low-lying water. You'll think you're in Louisiana when you're there to some degree. It's swampy. And then you go all the way down to the end, Old Salties. It's in an old schoolhouse. Everything in the room is baseball motif. The owners are baseball fans. There's lots of old Yankee stuff and old Orioles stuff in the room. Old Salties. But old, it's salty. A destination, complete destination crab cake. It's not on the way to anything.
This spring, I'm doing it.
And when you get there, you'll see the oyster the shells piled as high as the salt is when you go into the harbor tunnel. Like, and it's the oyster recovery program. And part of the education that I'm going to have this summer doing restaurant week is that the oyster shells feed the grasses and the marshland where the crabs, without oysters, there are no crabs. The oysters oxygenate the water. Mm-hmm. So healthy oysters are the most important thing in the world for healthy crabs. No healthy oysters, no healthy crabs. So I've had to learn all this last couple of years. So it's been educational for me too, because I like learning stuff. So there, I just taught you something, okay?
Old Salties, I'm doing that in the spring. And for the tour, when you come to Montgomery County, let me know. I'm gonna find a place. Clyde's, maybe.
I had a really bad crab cake, and I had a really good crab cake at a place called Crisfield Seafood.
Oh, Crisfield in Silver Spring.
Yeah, it's right on the border. It's a block into Montgomery County. That was the first crab cake. I went with John Allen from Trump City Devils and Stone Horses. It was really good, but it was during the plague. I mean, the plague, like mask, front door shut. Two people in, had to order it in a bag and take it with you. We ate it in a park with a beer that we got upstairs. There's a brewery right above it.
Right. Yeah. No. Crisfield is it's great. My parents used to go there all the time.
So I've had a crab cake there, and I'll give a thumbs up on that. The other place, I don't want to be disparaging. Let me say this. All right. And I say this with all the heart of a Baltimorean. It was too close to Daniel Snyder's house. Okay. Have a good crab cake. Daniel Snyder thinks crab cakes have celery and are treated like a chicken salad. So it was, that will tell you what part it was. It was in Potomac. So yeah, I had a upscale Maryland crab cake.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
Yeah. Hey, I love you. I appreciate you. Give me a plug. Tell me how what they can do with you. But see, you're an insider. I mean, you know, the people that subscribe to what you do are people like me that are a part of the business. But what Sports Business Journal does is so important.
Yeah, sportsbusinessjournal.com. I'm on Twitter, @_SBJ. And I do the podcast with Andrew Marchand of the New York Post. On we cover everything sports media. We just geek out on sports media. It's a lot of fun.
All right. Well, I geek out on sports media because I used to be a part of it until they threw me out. John Oran's here. He is all things sports business media. He is a crab cake lover, a Maryland fan, an Oriole fan. Did I leave anything? Caps fan? You're not a Raven fan. You're a Commander fan at heart.
Yeah, I'm not a, it's hard to be a Dan Snyder fan. I'm not a Ravens fan, but I grew up without a team. So I'm a big Orioles fan. Graduated from Maryland. I grew up with the like Tom McMillan and Lenny Elmore. Like, you know, I'm a big Terp fan. Love the Wizards, Caps. I'm a Washingtonian, except for when it comes to the O's.
In my Baltimore accent, I would say he's almost local. Almost local, he is. We appreciate you, man. Thanks for always making time.
Hey, good luck, man, with the anytime podcast. Now,
let's
sir.
Get a ball game. We'll get out of Fayetteville. Get a crab cake since you loved it so much. And a shout out to Marcella over at Coco's for doing it right. I've known Marcella for 30 years. Marcella and I used to watch the Houston Oilers play together at the Emerald Tavern at the beginning of my career. I found this Warren Moon throwback online, so I'm showing it a lot because I've been in collector mode lately because I'm getting old. And just the old memories. It's kind of like you being a Bullets fan. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.